Hello, everyone. Welcome to Press Pause, where we take a short break from our actual play show and do something new, something different, something spontaneous. This is Let's Chat, an interview show where we bring in creatives in the TTRPG space to talk about what they do and why they do it. So today, to chat with me, is Janine Florence Jacinto. Janine is one of our Season 2 cast members for Of Kith and Pen, playing the rather excitable Haku Bayani. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello.
It is. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I woke up in the worst mood I think I've ever been in, but we have grown out of it. We have grown past it, so that's all good.
You know, that's I had work this morning. I work as, when I'm not doing the fun like TTRPG stuff and like acting, I work as a barista, and we're introducing a new drink tomorrow, and I'm mentally preparing for the amount of people into my store. Yeah.
Is it like a summer drink?
Shh. It's just a new shirt. One. It's something. It's a drink.
Yeah, because I work as a bartender and I'm not doing all this stuff. So we have like our summer cocktails and stuff that we promote. So I get that.
Yeah.
But I've never been a barista. That sounds like somehow even worse than dealing with drunk people.
You're dealing with people that need caffeine.
Yeah. And they're serious.
So
about
that's the difference, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned it in your little thing about your unfortunate work thing, that you are an actor.
Yes.
So all I know about this is that when we started developing this second season for Queer PG, you were super duper busy. You were in a couple shows.
I was.
Yeah. Two at the same time?
Three, maybe?
What?
Yeah, I was doing... Yeah, it was three shows. And I'm also in another podcast. I'm in another, gotcha, like, podcast, TTRPG, which I have Ashley Johnson'd them for a bit, because I'm like,
sometimes
I need...
You gotta.
And I've been called Ashley Johnson. I'm like, I will take that compliment, like, constantly. Yeah. But I was very fortunate because I got cast in the world premiere of a show called Middleton Heights. Here in the greater Boston area, it is probably one of the most amazing and wild projects I've ever been a part of, because for the first time, I got to play a Filipino. I have never played a Filipino as a Filipino, which is wild, unless I've made the character in a TTRPG. So I got to play a Filipino American, and it was about a Filipino American family in the Midwest from 1967 to 2014. I was not only an actor in it, but I was also understudying two of the main roles, and it was a cast of four and a half. I say half because I was a half actor, because I played two different roles in the show. So I was playing four different characters, two understudies, two of my own track. So it was very stressful, but it was also my first professional contract, and I got to do it with a Filipino cast and a Filipino everything. So that was very fun and exciting, and I'm very grateful for that experience.
What was the theater company that put it up?
It was Umbrella Arts Stage Company, which is part of this really cool, like, it's Umbrella Arts, like, center, and they have, like, different events happening all of the time. They have currently an art exhibit. They just closed a show. So it was really fun space. They have two different theaters. We were in their little black box, and I love a black box theater because it's a little bit more intimate. It's great. So yeah, that's one of the shows I did.
And I think I know the answer to this question, but have you never played a Filipino on stage because there are not enough Filipino roles? I suppose, like, characters in plays?
There aren't a lot of Filipino roles, which kind of sucks immensely. There is a show that is, like, my dream show called Edith Can Shoot Things and Hit Them Too. and it's by this queer Filipino playwright. And I've just, what really sucks is that it is for an 18 plus actor to play a 14 year old. And if you know anything about me, I am 5 foot nothing. I look like a child. But every time that I've auditioned for this show, I have been told that I'm too young to play it because it's supposed to be adults playing kids and showing this like gender identity, showing this queer story. And I get it. It has to be like a more powerful, like it makes it more powerful. So I'm like, that's a really weird thing to say. I have to age into a kid role. But there's not a lot of Filipino roles. And slowly but surely, especially this past year, there has been a lot more Filipino shows coming out. I know that there is Prison Dancers that opened in Washington, which is about, I don't know if you know this video that blew up a long, like maybe 2010s-ish. It's the prison that did the Thriller dance.
Don't think like a I saw Thriller this.
Flash mob. It's someone wrote a musical about that event, and it took place in the Philippines, so that just premiered. There are two shows in LA. One is a queer Filipino show called The Bottoming Process, and then there's another Filipino show with East West Players that is. What is it? It's This Side of the World. That is incredible musical. And then there's another musical premiering in San Francisco next winter, spring-ish.
Okay.
About an immigrant worker who was on strike called Larry the Musical. So, like, there's Filipino stories coming out now, and it's very exciting. Or in the process.
Yeah, I think it's just hard, like, these are new shows. And
yeah.
At least in my experience in theater, everybody's doing the popular ones that everyone knows, you know? And so if you haven't had those shows for years, then you don't get to do them, even when they do come out as new shows.
Yeah, I had a really interesting conversation with one of my coworkers today about why I only do most of the things I do is like new works or indie projects. And he had it in his mind that it was easy because theater is so you can do a show over and over again and it's easy to do parts. But I was like, the thing is that once you start a show, you have the same typecast that you want to keep throughout like the entire process. One of the easiest example I could give to him was Hamilton. Phillipa Soo played Eliza. And the entire time, if you still see like black actresses play Eliza, but I feel like right when Phillipa Soo ended her role, it was continually Asian actresses that was filling that slot because there is this idea to keep that going. Mm-hmm. So that's why I started moving into more indie work, more fringe, more first productions. And also you get to work with a playwright in the first like 2 minutes and like workshop it and be like, this doesn't make sense. What do you want? And give a new light to a project.
Yeah. I also think that that is kind of the way to go. You get to be involved in the creative side of the process from the get-go, and I think that's great.
It's fun. It's quirky.
Yeah. Yeah, well, no, it's also, like, there are so many new works that are not even, like, full plays. Like, you can do so many cool one-acts, or, like, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like people don't realize that theater isn't doing South Pacific in Summerstock, you know? Like, there are so many other avenues of theater, and I'm forgetting the name of it, but I don't know if you heard they just shut down, like, the... What was it? It was a experimental theater show.
Oh.
I'm not remembering the name of it. It was a festival of experimental theater, and they just completely put the kibosh on it, and it was, like, full of new queer work, which, you know, sucks twofold. But I'm like, what? These are the shows that people are wanting to see now because they tell new and interesting stories.
Yeah. It's really interesting being in the New England theater scene. I'm very new to it, but I remember one of the people that I work with was like, hey, have you noticed that the shows that are having trouble selling tickets are the ones that we've continually put on, and the shows that are selling and selling out every single night are the BIPOC stories, the queer stories that are never seen with new actors that aren't seen. I'm like, that's wild to point out as someone who's coming in new. I'm like, everything is selling out. Everything is cool. And because the people I'm working with are, like, BIPOC, queer, mostly, like, the Asian American community, which is very strong here, and I'm very grateful with working with them. But it's, like, I never, like, it's not something you think of until, like, post-COVID was, like, when everything, you started, like, realizing what theater could be and what it could become through that.
Would you describe yourself, like, simply as an actor, or would you describe yourself as, like, you know, if you have a multitude of titles that you give yourself?
I am slowly moving towards storyteller because one of the big things, I love TTRPGs, that's storytelling. I'm an actor, that's storytelling. And I also have, like, a background in, like, social media marketing and stuff. I'm like, that's storytelling in itself. And, like, I love doing the creative stuff. Creative feels right as well, but, like, storyteller feels more fun in, like, also, like, in how I am as a person in life.
Well, it's so interesting that you say that, because I realized recently that when people are asking me, like, what I want to do, my, like, 100% of the time my answer is I want to keep telling stories. But I've, like, never, because I don't know, I've moved away from, like, the mainstream acting, and I'm a writer and that type of thing. But again, as you said, TTRPGs are such a way to tell stories. And I've realized, like, that's how I describe myself. I've just never ascribed the title of storyteller. So I think that's kind of cool that that's what you want to use. I think it's fun. Because I just go with, fresh. Like, I'm a podcaster. And that could mean anything. So, yeah, I enjoy that title. Would you find it annoying if I asked you about your actor journey? Like, how you started? Were you the...
No!
No? Were you, like, the high school theater kid that never stopped, or did it start before that?
So, yes and no. Fun fact, I am actually... was actually a jock. Full-out jock from middle and high school. That did theater in high school. So I was, in fact, Zac Efron. okay. But I did start acting freshman year of high school, so I was pretty late in the game, but I also did it as a side. I mostly focused on school and field hockey. That's the sport I played. I did field hockey. I was team captain, got lots of awards for it, went to college to play field hockey at a D3 level. D3, not that big, but still a big thing.
I feel like going to any level of college for a sport is a wild thing.
Yeah. So I went to college as a double in comp sci theater, and then also was playing field hockey. You could see where things started getting a little oof.
Yeah.
But
just a little bit.
My second day of preseason, my first year. So second day. Field hockey is the first part of the year. I got really bad injury and got hit in the face and was told that my ear might cauliflower. And in that moment, it kind of hit me. What cauliflowering is when your ear puffs up. And at the time, I was like, I'm Asian. I'm a dark brown Asian. I am AFAB. There are not a lot of roles for me, and you're telling me in this moment that, like, my ear might cauliflower. That was kind of, like, my jumpstart into wanting to focus more on acting. Slowly, I started dipping away from sports. Slowly, I started dipping away from computer science because it was not my passion. And, like, went full force into acting because one of the big reasons why I wanted to become an actor, why I am an actor and I am a storyteller, is to prove that, to prove to a younger me that there is a space for us and that we can do anything. Because I was a very self-conscious child growing up because I didn't see anyone of, like, my pigment, my ethnicity, my identity on screen. And I want to show a younger me that that is possible, that this is, there's a space for all of us. So that's, like, kind of where I'm at. So that's my journey as an actor and my, like, drive and why I keep doing everything that I'm doing.
That I think the best reason to do what we do is for ourselves.
But you also mentioned that you are on another TTRPG podcast. What's the podcast?
It is Beyond the Furthest Stars, which, fun, quirky, fresh. Something about Janine. I am very obsessed with other TTRPG systems. And this is Stars Without Numbers, and it's a sci-fi campaign. It's very cute, very fun. I play... With sci-fi, you get to have fun builds. I built a entire planet, basically... It's called Amerimanila. I based it off of Filipino-American culture. And I made this sweet little nurse that's just trying to get her degree and is kind of swept on this whole adventure into space. It's super fun. We have very cool characters. We have a robot. We have a human? Another human? Definitely my character's a human. And then we have a frog character. And it's giving me as Janine a moral compass character is very wild. Because with Haku, Haku's all over the place. So it's a very fun switch of character to be able to, like, when I get to go back with them. Play the moral compass that has all of the charisma, that has all the brains, that's trying to be like, okay, what if we didn't rob this planet? What if we just left and gave them big hugs? So they're a really fun group that I also got to do some voiceover work with, because they had fun like interlude episodes, and they were asking, hey, do you have any people that would like to VO, so I got to do that along with playing my own character.
Cool. That sounds fun. How long has that been going on for?
It will be a year next month of like official recordings going out. I've been playing with them since April of 2022. And then we started showing our episodes are the 1st and 15th of every month.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
That's cool.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So now that we're on the TTRPG track, I suppose we'll just stay on it. I gotta ask the question that I'm gonna ask everybody in these interviews. How did you happen upon TTRPGs?
So I went to a very gay college.
That's a wonderful experience.
All quote-unquote AFABs, all-female college. So there's a lot of things happen. We're all gay, we're all nerds. And then there's a small percentage of straight people, and we love them with all of our hearts, because they're allies! But I might have had a slight crush on one of my housemates, who also does theater and is obsessed with Critical Role, and was like, hey, I'm gonna do a D&D campaign. Anyone interested? I did that. So I joined a D&D campaign. It was also the reason why I binged Critical Role. I don't know if you know this, Kenzie. I did start finals week on episode 1 of campaign 1. Ended finals week on episode 24.
I honestly am not going to say anything about binging TV. I am going to say, how did you manage that during finals week?
Again, I went to a nice small liberal arts gay college. The way that we did finals at my school was you can pick a time to schedule your finals. And I was also a liberal arts, I was humanities, so it's just papers. So I had it playing in the background on like speed. Plus I would just skip everything that like was not necessary, like the gifts, because I think that's 1 through 24 is when they did.
Yeah, early on they did all the extra stuff, yeah.
All the fun extra stuff, like I skipped the breaks and stuff like that, and I had it like going very quickly. So that's how I got through it very fast during finals week, because I was just not
I had most of my finals done by that point. I was just chilling on campus until I got to leave.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. Are you still watching Critical Role?
Ish. Yeah. I am on campaign 2. Slowly working my way through campaign 3. I am more of a Dimension 20 stand.
No, I totally get it. I love D20 too. Yeah.
I'm rewatching A Crown of Candy so I can go into the Ravening War fresh in
I wish I had done that, because I'm watching the Ravening War and I'm like, I have missed or forgotten these things.
Yeah, I started episode 1 and was like, I don't remember. I remember this name. We're restarting. I can't. We're just going to start from the top.
Okay, so you started in college because you had a crush. Love that. So you started with D&D then?
I started with D&D, and then my junior year, again, fun college stuff. I was in a, like, magical realism class where we could also play with sci-fi. It was, like, one of my favorite classes to take in college. But your final project could be anything as long as it fit into the realm of, like, shamans, shapeshifters, and the magic if. As long as it fit in that realm. Someone was doing an Urban Shadows campaign and needed players. And I was like, oh, I can hop in. I've never played Urban Shadows, but if you need another person, I'll go into that. That was my junior year. And that was my first taste of Powered by the Apocalypse and why I can never let go of Powered by the Apocalypse.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of my favorite systems.
It is one of my favorite systems. It was a really fun time. Then COVID hit, and my COVID activity was learning different TTRPGs. So, like, I was just, like, consuming as much as I can. Different games. I love Powered by the Apocalypse, and I love Kids on Bikes. Those are my two, like, top two. If someone says, I want to play a game, I'll go, which one? You got to pick one of these two. Most of the time, it's Kids on Bikes. And then Powered by the Apocalypse. I did an Urban Shadows campaign with my friends for a little bit during COVID, which was really fun. They don't trust me after letting me run a game. They're like, we can't. I'm an interesting GM. My friends describe it as a mix of, like, Abria and Brennan. And then if they let Erica's craziness as the GM, then that's me.
That's a person, all right. Those three together. That makes a very specific person.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. That's like, wow, I would describe that as like almost a little psychopathic, I think. Because you have Brennan's like seriousness in the sense of like, I know this world and I know this story. And then you have Abria's, the story's the best part. And then you have Erica's chaos gremlin.
Yes.
That's kind of terrifying. Yeah.
It's because it's also the way that it happens is it is in like a format. Like once Erica's very much at the end of how I GM in like a session. So if
might have to be
up,
that way.
If Erica starts popping up, they're like, okay, it looks like it's time for a session done. And I'm like, you're right. I'm getting tired and Janine's talking too much.
I joke, but it does sound like it could be a fun time. You as a GM, yeah.
I am about to run a Kids on Bikes one shot with my friends that I ran for another group of my friends for Halloween. So it's just a Halloween one shot. Again, it's the same one, different cast of characters. So I'm very excited because I'm slowly going back into the GMing, DMing situation, slowly but surely. Because there's so many games I want to play, but no one wants to run them. And I go,
that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm like, well, if I want to play these TTRPGs, I have to do it.
Yep.
So I totally get it. But you know what I've found, actually, is that I kind of prefer it. A little bit. And that could be because I'm a control freak, but I also think I enjoy facilitating a story, and I like knowing that I like knowing that my players are going to find like a catharsis in it, within it. And I've found that when I play, I don't always find that. So like being able to give that to other people is really nice.
One of my favorite things is working with a player on their character and talking through it and just building a story with them in your world. I love that creation. That's also a problem in my brain being like, I love workshopping plays. It's a whole workshop talking with them and then also like sliding in a detail that's like, what if you did this? Here's a little morsel of something to make your character even more fun. They go, that's great. And then they don't realize you're using it later. That is one of my favorite moments.
I'm like, don't take anything I give you and think I'm going to forget about it, because I won't. It's coming back. I'm not going to waste my time making something up that I'm not going to use.
It's also watching a player like finally connect the dots in like real time. It's fun. It's cool. Because I also do that as a player. And I go, I see what's happening. The math is mathing.
Yeah.
Sometimes the math doesn't math. But like as the GM and being able to like guide that story and be like, here's where the math is supposed to go. Very fun. Very
it's cool. Also like a way to play the game I want to play without having to worry that the person running the game doesn't understand the way I play. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty selfish. But I think... I mean, if I know that I'm going to get out of my game what I want and other people want that same thing so they play with me, then everyone gets a piece of the cake.
Yeah. Also, working with a group that you know very well and, like, knowing what their favorite, like, tropes are, what their favorite, like, thing is, and, like, seeing the excitement of when they finally see it in game. Like, it's my people pleaser coming out and being like, this is it! This is for you! Look at your little treat!
What tropes do you like?
The tropes? Oh my god. I'm an enemies to lovers stan.
Oh my goodness, me too. So hard. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
It's like, I want you to start out as the most unhealthy relationship as possible. And then fall in love. If you haven't stabbed each other 5 times, we're not talking.
Have you read the Atlas 6 yet?
I have not. I should? Okay. I shall do that. Let me just write that down so I don't forget it.
There's 2 books, and the 3rd book, I believe, is coming out this fall or next spring. So I'm going to tell you that. Of like, it is a trilogy. Book 3 is coming out. I was told that I need to give people warnings that it's not a complete series yet.
I've been reading Gideon the Ninth since the 1st book came out. I can wait.
Olivier Blake, who is the writer of that, used to be a fanfic writer. So that's enough to give you her entire book series.
Would like to posit the theory that she didn't used to be a fanfic writer, that she probably still writes fanfiction.
Yes.
I don't know if that goes away. I think once you get into that, you kind of get stuck.
I'm currently reading her book. I have the book sleeve right here. One for My Enemy. And it is set in today. It's like just like general, like present. Romeo and Juliet retelling. Witches, New York.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you are, as a theater person, another really good Romeo and Juliet retelling is Chloe Gong's These Violent Delights.
That is on my list, right? I put that on my list like 2 weeks ago.
You got to. It's, yeah. I
don't think I have that one. I went to this, actually, I might have just bought that one.
Read it immediately. It's, I devoured that book in like 2 days, and then the next one in like 3. And then there's a duology, and then there's a spin-off.
Okay. Duologies are like the thing now.
I think I prefer them more.
Yeah.
Honestly, over the... Because when I went to the Olivier Blake signing for her second book, she brought up this really good point of, like, book two will always suck because you're still building in the climax for book three. So you're building in the characters, you're building in all that fun jazz. That's my thing with, like, trilogies. It's book two feels, it's not giving that what I need. Except for the Hunger Games. That's
okay. I was about to use it as an example and you're like, that's an exception.
Well,
I'm not a huge fan of that series in the first place, so I don't hate it. I just, okay, like, am not overwhelmingly into it.
That's fair. I definitely wasn't one of those kids that had the Mockingjay pin.
No, I did not either. I had all the books and I read them and I saw all the movies.
I think it was one of the best adaptations.
Okay. I don't remember the movies very well, but I
the book to movie adaptations, I think, were one of my favorites. Yeah.
There's like a lot of things, a lot of books that I'm hard-pressed to hate. I'll just, like,
okay,
appreciate that. Like, I won't really like them, but, like, they're fine, you know? It's hard to get me to hate a book.
Hey, is anyone else out there obsessed with dice? Does anyone out there want to join the I Have Too Many Dice Sets for My Own Good Club? Or is this going to be a party of one? Because I would be the first to tell you that I have a dice problem. But I don't necessarily think that's the worst problem to have. So if you've got the same mindset, Queer PG has a fun little offer for you. If you head over to fanrolldice.com, you can use our code QueerPG10 at checkout to get 10% off your purchase. They've got gemstone dice, my personal favorite. They've got wooden dice, they've got metal dice, and a whole bunch of other designs and accessories to fit all of your dice gremlin needs. So, if you find you're itching for something new to add to your collection, head on over to fanrolldice.com, and remember, QueerPG10, that's QueerPG10, at checkout to get 10% off. Have fun rolling!
What are the
books? I'm trying to think about maybe one that I'd hate.
I'm also trying
to feel like I read one recently, but I can't remember what it was called, so that's not helpful.
Hey, is anyone else out there obsessed with dice? Does anyone out there want to join the I Have Too Many Dice Sets for My Own Good Club? Or is this going to be a party of one? Because I would be the first to tell you that I have a dice problem. But I don't necessarily think that's the worst problem to have. So if you've got the same mindset, Queer PG has a fun little offer for you. If you head over to fanrolldice.com, you can use our code QueerPG10 at checkout to get 10% off your purchase. They've got gemstone dice, my personal favorite. They've got wooden dice, they've got metal dice, and a whole bunch of other designs and accessories to fit all of your dice gremlin needs. So, if you find you're itching for something new to add to your collection, head on over to fanrolldice.com and remember, QueerPG10, that's QueerPG10, at checkout to get 10% off. Have fun rolling!
I will say, a really good book. Another theater thing, Shakespeare-wise. If We Were Villains, one of my favorite reads in the past, like, 5-6 years.
Man, you're just giving me a whole list.
Can I just read this, please, like, just like the first...
Please, oh, I'm gonna settle in.
Wait, where is my little... No, I have a book that has the best description. Here it is. I have 3 copies of this book. This is the collector's edition from London that my parents picked up for me because they knew that I liked this book, but picked up the wrong version. So they picked up 2 copies for me, and then I have my original copy that is tabbed out. You can't see it. Yeah, those are tabs.
I kind of see it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, ooh, at those. Yeah, tabs. There they are.
This gives you the little sneak peek. Enter the players. There were 7 of us then, 7 bright young things with wild, precious futures ahead of us. Until that year, we saw no farther than the book in front of our faces. That's just, like, my favorite thing, because Enter the Players, it is small liberal arts college, 7 seniors in a Shakespearean acting intensive. That drama in itself. And then senior year, dark academia.
It's on my list. Who's the author of that one?
M.L. Rio, which I believe this was the debut novel.
Oh, dope. I just remembered what book I do hate, and I didn't finish it.
And it's, like, super popular, so people are gonna hate me.
Which one?
It's A Court of Thorns and Roses.
I don't want to read that series because I don't think I'd like it.
My friend loves them, like, just beyond loves them. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, you have to try it to read this book. You have to try it. I was like, I don't want to. Like, isn't that the furry book? And she's like, it's fine. It's not. It's fine. I was like, okay, sure, whatever. So I tried it. I got, like, maybe 6 chapters in, and I was like, I hate everything about this. So I didn't finish it.
I usually
finish books, but...
That's valid.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't do it.
I don't think I can get into that book series. There's too many...
I'm not, like, a massive, like, romance is the main part of the story person.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm here for the enemies to lovers if it's romance.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the exception of
romance. That's it. We are closing in on our hour, and we've not yet talked about Of Kith and Pen, and I want to talk about it. I appreciate the book chat, but I also want to talk about Of Kith and Pen. I want to know what the development process was like for this season with Harper and the rest of the crew. What the, like, the world building aspect of it was, like, how you guys went about that.
I think this was probably one of my favorite, like, session zeros, like, quote zeros, mm-hmm. or, like, I guess negatives, or,
there are a bunch of them.
There was a bunch of them. We sat with each other and just talked about the world for, like, a lot of sessions. I have my notes somewhere in here, but, like, maybe 4 or 5.
I was gonna say, I think there was, like, 4 or 5, yeah.
Which was really fun, and I think it helped me create a character that I was more comfortable with doing, because sometimes you start a session or you start a game with very little of knowing the world, or, like, you have to read, like, a 20-page document to know the world, and being able to create it where we're sitting there, we're making gods, we're picking names, we're making our kith and family, and also finding connections with other kith in the area was fun. I don't know if that makes sense. It was a really cool process of, like, building an area only the viewers got to, like, hear. The listeners got to hear only a little bit of, but the Lastings, it gave more of a root for the Lastings. And then also coming up with the writing club was very fun. I loved that concept. I don't know, it gave me, like, a little bit flashbacks to, like, 2020 when I was sending letters to all of my friends nonstop every single week, and then being able to have it here felt very therapeutic in a way.
Yeah. I really like the letter writing club as well. That was fun for me to hear about.
Oh, opening up the sessions with letters? So much fun.
So fun. Because we didn't do recaps for season 1, and I wasn't planning on doing recaps for season 2. But because of the idea of it being a letter, it was seamlessly works. It's so fun. What was your inspiration for Haku? Like, how'd they come to life?
So Haku is a mix of 2 different books, which is the Stargazer and the Secret Keeper, which I saw both of those books and I loved elements of both, but didn't want to fully commit to one of them. So I combined the two playbooks. They're not called skins in this game.
No, they're playbooks.
They're playbooks. Because I loved the idea of having hidden messages in the stars and having this one starkeeper, that wrote stories based off the stars, and that's what's throughout history, and creating Haku, who is obsessed with these stories, obsessed with the person that created these stories and stars, felt very exciting and very fun to play with. So that's where they came from. I also just wanted to be an otter for some strange reason. I'm like, they're just so cute.
Look, they used to be my favorite animal. So
I will not lie. I almost picked my favorite animal, which is a penguin. So I was torn between one of the two. And I was like, do I want to waddle or do I want to scurry?
That's interesting. Because it feels like everybody is roughly the same vibe of animal. And so if you just had a penguin in there, that would have been really funny.
I think I started hearing everyone else's. I'm like, I'm going to do the otter. Yeah. I think this works really well. I think it's also really funny because Haku is the tallest.
Mm-hmm.
I, Jeanine, am the smallest player. Even though I know I don't see anyone, Haku gives off small boy energy.
100%.
Because I am small boy energy. So I'm like, I got to make him tall. Oh, well.
It's cute. It works. It's an enigma.
It's an enigma. I love the little glasses on Haku. My favorite scene to, like, RP, I hope you were at this one, was when Haku's glasses fell off.
Yeah, it's all in the bag.
It's already edited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've never played a character with glasses. So, like, I'm like, this would happen. And then, like, having the glasses break in session, I was like, huh. As Jeanine, have never felt this fear, but now as this character who cannot see anything, I feel this fear in this a little, like, far away from home, no glasses. This is terrifying. So that was a very fun RP moment for me.
As someone who does wear glasses, it is just blobs when you don't have them. It's just a lot of blobby people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's disconcerting. Have you ever played Wander Home before?
I have not. This is my first time playing Wander Home. I loved our first sessions when we were like, when you gave us the characters and we just went right in for our like rounds of like auditions / like chemistry reads. That was really fun. I think what I loved about it, because I think we were truly playing Wander Home, no dice rolls. We were going tits out all the way into the game.
Yeah, saying tits out when relating to Wander Home is a very interesting dichotomy. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and I think it was really, it is so wholesome. And like, I loved it. Because we played the base game characters,
mm-hmm.
which was really fun. I think I played
dancer. And like, none of you are now playing.
None of
You're
us are base
all
game.
Playing either homebrewed or fanmade.
Yeah, expansion pack.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I think Mishi is expansion, and then the rest, Octa and I are both homebrew, and then, I almost said Alma. Tati is playing, fan-made.
Okay.
Which is really fun.
Yeah.
I love it. We're a weird group of... The characters are...
They are, but I talked to Jay, who wrote the game, and Jay was saying that the fan-made content is kind of what makes it. Mm-hmm. Like, at this point, Possum Creek Games doesn't, like... Jay was saying that more people can play Wander Home better than Jay can play Wander Home at this point, because... of how much fan content has been made and how many people are playing the game. So apparently Jay thinks it's a great addition to the world. And I do too.
It's fun. I love it. It's also, it's nice playing a game where you don't have to fear that something's going to stab you in the back in like 2 seconds.
Yeah. Live your life.
You can live your life. I do remember, like, playing in, like, the first sessions of, like, our first, like, auditions and stuff. And me sitting there being like, I don't trust this being. I really don't trust it. And I'm like, wait, no. Everything is perfectly fine. He just has a picture frame of his kid and wants to go see his kid. I'm like, okay,
it's
great.
It's what it is. It's what it is. It's not fallacy.
It's just a couple of kith wanting to help their serval.
I also have never actually played Wander Home. So I'm hearing it being played rather than playing it myself. But I got the book and I've read through it and I love it. But I actually don't think that the group that I play with would thrive playing Wanderhome. So I'm holding off to introduce that for a little bit.
This is something I always do with like friends that I meet that I finally know that play TTRPGs. I automatically be like, you would love this system. Automatically. Sometimes when I first meet a game, like TSL, and I go, no, you're not a TSL, you're a Wanderhome gay. Got it.
But it's a wonderful game, and I'm so glad that we're getting to play it and that you're a part of our cast this time around. Because if I'm remembering correctly, you auditioned for season one and that didn't work out, and we got you for season two.
So I had scheduling conflicts, and I've only run Monster Heart. And I have not played it. And I want to be a player in it so bad. Like, it is... I don't know why. I think it's just... I was a Teen Wolf stand growing up. So, like...
Well,
like,
Mads, who played Caleb, also was a Teen Wolf stand. So, he truly took the werewolf and ran with it.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
That's like the next thing I'm like going to start binging is like just season one of QueerPG. Because I like started it and then Worlds Beyond Numbers with, yeah, I was like, I love you guys with all of my heart. I have to.
It's so good. That's possibly currently the best TTRPG show.
Mm-hmm.
And I make one, and I would love to say that ours was, but I can't, in all honesty.
Well, you're a little baby gaze in the world of TTRPGs, so, like, this, it's fine. We are. So, like, it's a slow, some people start here, and they keep up.
That's where they started, and they just kept, yeah.
the ball is only rolling up, to quote Riz Gutgak. Riz? Was that Riz? Yep.
I believe it was Riz, yeah. Okay, well, we are coming to the end. So I want to thank you again for giving us some of your time.
Yeah.
I do have one last question for you.
What's up?
And I think it would just be fun to close us out if you could tell us one of your favorite moments at a table.
At a table?
Yeah. Or, you know, on a pod or whatever. But just like a favorite game moment that you've had.
Favorite game moment. I am not a flirtatious human in the entire world. I'm a very awkward human. When I played Urban Shadows with my friends, I had to do a riddle, and one of my friends is really good at riddles, and I know the best way to get her out is to throw a lesbian pirate in front of her. So I threw a lesbian pirate in front of her that flirted with her the entire time, and my favorite move was like, hey, so you feel this little tug on your belt loop, and you get spun around and dipped. And the pirate puts her feather behind your ear, gives you a little kiss on the forehead, and lets you go. And I think that was just kind of like my smoothest moment ever. Because it's also like, I need you out, because this is a very easy riddle. Yeet.
Yeah, please.
Here's your treat.
That's so funny. Wow, you would really be throwing yourself in the deep end in Monster Hearts.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, you would be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because there's the sex move in it, right? That's, like, one of the biggest, like, things in
Which is really odd. I mean, you would think. But that didn't come up a lot in our game.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like how tokens aren't coming up in our game.
Yeah, there's, like, the things you think are super important tend to not work out when you're trying to, like, just narratively tell a story. So the sex moves, because there were a lot of negative effects to them, didn't actually help progress our game, so they weren't used a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited to jump into that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the complete opposite side of the coin from Wanderhome.
Yeah, y'all really did went, let's do wholesome.
We did. We're like, what is the complete opposite side of the spectrum? Let's do that. Okay, well, thank you so much, Janine, for chatting with me. And for everybody listening and or watching if you're on our Patreon. Until next time.
Yay.
boy, I sure hope you enjoyed this chat I had with Janine like a year ago. Since then, they have played Hakubayani in Of Kith and Pen, as well as GMing our recent Kids on Bike series, Let's Go to the Mall. If you haven't given that a listen yet, I highly suggest you scroll down a couple episodes and do so. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us a rating or a review. Tell your friends about us. Tell the friends of your friends about us. Tell your third cousin once removed. You'll have to look up who in your family that could possibly mean. I have no idea. For further support for our show, you can also jump over to our Patreon, patreon.com/queerpg. We just revamped our tiers for the year and have a lot of fun new things. One of those things is actually getting to watch the video versions of our Let's Chat interviews. Keep abridged of our Twitter and Instagram and Blue Sky and TikTok and, would you believe it, Tumblr. The link to all of those is in the description box below. We've got more stories to tell, so don't go anywhere. Until next time.